on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you here in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program James Patrick. James, of course, is a Winnipegger and is the new head coach of the Kootenay Ice of the Western Hockey League. James, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
James, first of all, first and foremost, congratulations on the new gig with the Kootenay Ice. After so many years as an assistant coach in the NHL, why now? Why is this the right time to sort of leave the NHL and take your chance and become a head coach for the Kootenay Ice?
Well, it was, you know, something I went back and forth on all, you know, the last month, or, you know, even, you know, once Dallas made the coaching change, you know, with Lindy and I, you know, just wondering where I wanted to go next. I loved doing what I was doing. So, you know, it was a lot of fun working with players, a lot of fun. I always felt if you couldn't play anymore, it was you were really close to the action. You still had a lot of ups and downs and the adrenaline coming for games. And it was a lot of fun to work with guys and see them have success. So, I just was at that point where I think this past year was a real tough year for us in Dallas. I had a little bit of frustration working with I just found a little more frustration there this year than past years working with some of the older players who weren't as receptive to being helped. And I just kind of steered me in the direction. I loved working with, you know, young players trying to teach and trying to develop. And, started looking, you know, got me to look at some different options. And then, you know, when I did end up meeting Matt and Greg, the two owners, you know, just coincidentally from Winnipeg, it started to come together, and it just was something I was real excited about.
James, what are you most looking forward to as far as being a head coach in the Western Hockey League? Because it's obviously a big change from going from the National Hockey League game to the junior game.
No question. I think it's a big difference, but I think, in a lot of ways, the way the game's played in the NHL dictates, the way other leagues and younger leagues start playing as far as systems. I think younger players now are more skilled than ever. We're seeing just the influx of young players in the NHL. I think they still have a lot to learn structurally in the game. Better habits, better training habits, lifestyle habits, but no doubt, you can't deny the impact of, you know, a lot of 18, 19-year-olds have come in the league the last 3-4 years. I've also, you just look around the Western Hockey League, there's been so many former NHL coaches or assistant coaches who you can see the impact that they've had on their teams, Brent Sutter to Don Hay in Calgary, Kevin Constantine was a longtime coach in Everett, Mark Habshad coaches in Saskatoon, Tim Hunter in Moose Jaw. I mean, you can go on and on. So I think I fortunately watched a lot of games the last 3 years because my nephew played. And so I know there is a big difference. You got younger players. You got, players at different phases of their development. You got 16-year-olds who are 170 pounds. You got 20-year-olds who are 230 pounds. But structurally, there are a lot of similarities now between the junior game and the NHL games.
James, in addition to all the development you're going to be doing with the young players, what sort of community involvement do you think you'll have, which is probably a little bit of a departure from what you were doing in the NHL?
I think it's going to be it's going to be, something that I haven't done as much of in the past. you know, I think, you know, when I was in Buffalo, probably had a lot bigger impact in the community than Dallas. And so you did get exposed to, you know, some corporate events and meeting some of the city business leaders and having team luncheons a couple times a year, you know, with various groups in the city. So, I did see it. Obviously, usually your general manager and your head coach and maybe the captain of the team are the more prominent people involved in those situations. And so it's just a natural progression. We just had one 2 days ago with the turnout was fantastic in Cranbrook with a lot of the city business leaders trying to get them back on board to support the team. My number one function is and job is coaching the team, and there's been so many things just, you know, it's just starting, just coming together because it just happened in the last 4 or 5 days. But, you know, it's almost overwhelming thinking of all the things that we have to do. But I do know that, you know, it's still a small community like Cranbrook, and to get the support, you have to be involved and you have to, you know, show your face and get to know the people.
James Patrick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the new head coach of the Kootenai Ice of the Western Hockey League after a lengthy career, a lengthy experience in the NHL, most recently as an assistant coach in Dallas under Lindy Ruff. And James, you mentioned you had some frustrations with some of the veteran players as of recent. Do you think that's an issue? Maybe issues not the right word. Is it sort of just a reality of the veterans that the Stars had on the roster last year, or do you think it's a sort of a new phenomenon with players throughout the NHL?
You know, it's a tough one to describe. I just know in my situation, and I think because we had a tough year, you know, it just exposed maybe our coaching staff to a little more frustration with. You know, you get the odd guy who doesn't want to realize where his game is now, doesn't want to adapt to the changes, you know, that you have to make to still be able to play and be successful in the league now. And I will say this, I think hockey players are the best athletes of any of the major sports. They're, 99% of the guys are fantastic. They're respectful. They're respectful of the coaches and the teammates and the community. So, but I did, you know, I think because we had a tough year, you just saw a lot more frustration. You saw a lot, you know, the odd times of different behavior from a few guys. And I just, when I was weighing it out, I said, you know, I don't know if I want to, you're going to have situations and you're going to have, whether it's upset players or frustrated players, any level you're at. But I just, it kind of was steering me to look at a different direction. I just said, this will be a different challenge. I mean, it's going to be a big challenge, you know, trying to teach younger players and get through to them as well. So, I just thought I just felt that it was the right time for me. But, you know, going back to the older players, it is no question, you know, Lindy and I and, you know, Kurt Fraser last year, we talked a lot about, you know, us having to adapt and we have to adjust because players and younger players are different than they were 20 years ago. We all know that. But you still have to find a way to get through to them. You have to communicate. It was something we really, really worked on last year. You had some success with a couple guys here and there. We had a young defenseman who, you know, he was a rookie in the league and had probably played 30 games, you know, under his belt, but he thought he had made it already. His behavior was so disappointing when we healthy scratched him. And I remember talking to him and saying, you haven't even established yourself as a player in the league. And I said, you got so much talent and you can play a long time, but you got a lot of work to go. So you'd get into those situations and you'd be a little disappointed in the response you got from players. So it's natural and it's what you get when you have a group of 23 individuals and they all have their own story. But I just wanted a different challenge, what it probably mostly came down to.
Now, James, just sticking with Lindy Ruff, who you mentioned earlier, then we want to ask you about your famous cousin who's about to be drafted, pardon me, nephew
yeah.
that's supposed to be drafted into the NHL. You know, Lindy Ruff, you obviously have a long-standing friendship, and it goes back to prior to coaching together in Buffalo. But what makes Lindy Ruff such a great coach, going back to the Buffalo Sabres, and obviously Dallas won the Central Division last year?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me not to be biased, but I played with Lindy 3 years, and I played for him. And so in my 21 years of playing, I think I played for 15 different coaches, head coaches over at some point. And I, you know, so I obviously was exposed to him as a head coach, and then coached with him for, you know, over the past 11 years. And I think his strength, number one, is his ability to adjust and change. He's been able to change with the times. Really smart guy, photographic memory. He can remember every goal scored against. I mean, we'll play a team 60 games later that we played them the first week of the season, then you're playing them in March. And, you know, before we've even looked back at our game notes, you know, he remembers exactly what happened, when we played him before. He is a good teacher. He's got presence. And I think you still, as a head coach, you got to have presence. And you use it in a different way. But I think the players still have to, there still has to be the respect, and they have to know that you're the boss. And so he doesn't throw it out there, but he has it when he needs it. I think he's been a student of the game, though. You know, I think he's, like I said, he's been able to adapt with the changes. And I think for me, the thing that maybe the most impressed me was at times his in-game adjustment, where you're getting, you can't get out of your end, or you're getting things, the other team's really frustrating. And after, a period, he's saying, okay, we're changing. We're doing this. We'll play a 1-1-3, or, we're playing a 2-1-2. We're not getting anything with this. We're making this change right now. And I've seen him over the years have success making those type of moves. So, I know it comes from experience, and it comes from what he sees when he watches the game.
James, we couldn't chat with you without bringing up Nolan, of course. And, your nephew has size, speed, and skill up the middle. He's expected to go first or second overall. What areas do you think he still needs to work on?
I think he's got, like every young player, he's got a long way to go. I think his strength is in his vision and hockey sense, which I've seen it from a young age, and he can make plays. He will be, he'll be a good sized player. He'll be 6'3", and he's a little over 200 pounds now, and so you expect him to grow. He's going to have to adapt to the quickness of the game. I think to be at the junior level, he's a good two-way center. Like, he's smart defensively. You know, for a center to play in the NHL, and especially, on your top couple lines, which you hope he can develop into, you have to be so good. And if you are not so dynamic offensively, then you have to be so good defensively as well. And there's so many examples. I mean, I'm watching Mike Fisher in these playoffs, and I know he's an older center, but down low defensively, he's a beast. And I mean, he moves his feet. He boxes out forwards. He wins battles. He'll move the puck, and then bang, it's using your speed to try and, catch up to the play and be involved offensively. So I think in those areas, he's going to, he's got a lot of growing to do still. I definitely believe he has it in him, just judging by where he was, against his peers at the junior level. But it's going to be a whole different story, over the next couple of years if he wants to play in the NHL. And it comes with just, getting stronger, getting, a little more mature. I think his skating is okay. I think once his gets a little more strength in his legs and butt, I think he'll be good in that area. But quickness and speed is something that all players have to work on, because the game keeps getting quicker. And I think, if he gets, a little more, in that area, I think he can be a real good player.
So, James, as I just touched on, Nolan's expected to go first or second. You were drafted 9th overall. His dad, Steve, was drafted 20th overall. His uncle, Rich, was drafted 26th overall. So is there going to be some sort of chatter at the family barbecue this summer if he, in fact, does get to be the top-ranked Patrick drafted in the NHL?
No, I don't think he's ready for that because I've seen a lot of real high picks not make it. So wait till he's really made it in the NHL. Then I'll welcome his, I'll welcome his mouthing off. But I think it'd be a big thrill for him if he went first. It makes no difference. It doesn't make you a better player. So he'll have an opportunity wherever he goes, if he goes first, second, or third. But I just, we've seen so many times over the years, it doesn't matter where you get drafted. It's what you do once you get drafted. You're going to get a real long look. You're going to get a better opportunity if you're a high pick. But it still comes down to how good of a player you become and how much you develop and how hard you work over the next, 2, 3, 4 years. We used to tell kids in Buffalo from the second they're drafted, they basically had a 5-year window to make it. And how much, where were you going to go in 5 years? How much better could you be? A lot of those kids would go back to junior and then, a couple of years or 2 years in the minors, and you either make it or break it. So I know I think he's a special kid. He's got some special talents, but you still have to do it. And so without driving him crazy, I'll try and enforce that with him a little bit.
He can still learn something from his uncle, right?
I hope so.
James Patrick is the new head coach of the Kootenay Ice of the Western Hockey League. James, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Best of luck with the ice. And have a great summer, James. Really appreciate your time.
Okay.
Take care.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Thanks very much. When we come back, do we have Nick Henry coming up next? I think we do. Okay, Nick Henry is coming up next. He's going to be drafted supposedly in the first or second round of the upcoming NHL draft. He's from Portage La Prairie. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Nick Henry of the Regina Pats. Nick is, of course, from Portage La Prairie, Manitoba, expected to be drafted at the upcoming NHL draft. Nick, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Nick, it was about a week ago, give or take, or you were in Buffalo for the 2017 NHL Draft Combine. What was that experience like for you as you approach the upcoming NHL draft?
I think for me personally, it's a very neat event to go to. There's lots of good players there, and, you get to meet some guys I haven't met before and then hang out with some guys that I haven't been able to hang out with for the last couple of years.
Nick, what was the weirdest question that you got from either the media or an NHL team?
I actually was pretty lucky. I didn't get any of those weird questions. I got a lot of good hockey questions, and things went pretty well.
So if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be then, Nick?
I'm kidding.
So Nick, what did it mean to you as a kid from Portage to help lead the Terriers to the to a championship in the MJHL?
I think it was a pretty cool moment for me to do it in front of all my family and friends, and being a hometown kid, growing up watching them my whole life, it's kind of a dream come true.
Nick, you took a great step this season, in terms of your play, and it was reflected in your draft ranking or the rankings that come out from NHL Central Scouting. You were ranked 25th at the midterm ranking, 25th at the final ranking. How much attention did you pay to that throughout the course of your season, and how do you attribute that sort of leap forward you took in your game this season with the Pats?
I think for me it was it's something neat, with social media, you can't really get away from things like that. You're kind of forced to see them. And then I think I had good coaches who gave me every chance to succeed this year, and John Paddock and Dave Struch. So I think I really excelled in their program.
Nick, going back to February of this year, you won WHL Player of the Week honors. You picked up 10 points in 4 games. What was that experience like for you to be WHL Player of the Week?
Yeah, I didn't really expect anything. I got a text from our media guy saying I I got it. I was pretty excited about that. But, you know, I played on a really good line this year, and, you know, we had a really good chemistry between the three of us, and, you know, we all had a lot of success this year.
Nick, originally you were contemplating playing in the NCAA for Western Michigan. Now that you've looked back, you know, a year later you played with Regina, how do you feel about your decision?
You know, I think it was the right decision for me. It was obviously a tough one. Going to go play down at Western Michigan under Andy Murray, but I think for me and my family it was a good decision because it's close to home. They're able to come watch most of my regular season home games and playoff games. So I think that was a big decision for me, and it's kind of proven that I made the right decision right now.
Nick Henry is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He plays for the Regina Pats of the Western Hockey League. He's from Portage la Prairie, Manitoba, expected to be drafted at the upcoming NHL draft in Chicago.
Nick, you're obviously a player who likes to score goals, but which NHL player would you compare your game to? And I know you've probably got this question before, or is there a player that you strive to become once you get to that pro level?
I think I've been kind of, looking at a player like a Travis Zajac, another Manitoba boy. I think there's a lot of good comparisons within our games. We both are very skilled, very smart with the puck, make good plays, and you know we can do a lot of things on the ice that help our team win. And also, I think at our age, there's a lot of similarities with our skating. I think I've been talking to people, and you know they said that teams were concerned with his first three strides in his draft year. So I think that's the concern for me. And he fixed it. You know, he did a lot of hard work, I imagine. And, you know, I'm going to have to do that this summer. But, you know, he's had a real nice NHL career.
Nick, looking ahead to next year, how excited are you to be part of the 100th Memorial Cup, which is, you know, being hosted by Regina next season?
That's really special, I think. We were two wins away from this year. I think that really stings, you know, something in the back of my head every day. So it's going to be special next year. And, you know, you want to take it all in and enjoy it all.
Nick Henry, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Nick, obviously the season in Anaheim, pardon me, the season in Regina, you were playing with Anaheim Ducks first-rounder Sam Steele. He led the WHL with 131 points. What did you take from playing on a line with Sam for the majority of the season? You know, how special was it to see a guy perform at that level, being up close and personal with that, and helping him with that?
I think it was a big thing. I think, you know, I learned a lot. You know, he's a very hard-working kid. He's driven. He's a very special player, very smart. And I think, over the last few years, they had a little bit of a problem trying to find a line mate for Sam because, you know, it's not always easy to play with those guys. And, they brought me in because they had Cole Sanford, but he was 20 years old, so he graduated, and they brought me in to, you know, hopefully fill that role and be able to play with Sam and help him, and he can help me. And I think, it was a really good year for me, Sam, and Dawson Liedahl.
Nick, what was the transition like for you going back to the early part of the season, transitioning over from playing for Portage la Prairie in the MJHL and then playing for Regina in the WHL?
I think obviously at the start, I think, I was given a lot of opportunity, and, I was able to take advantage of that and, you know, do stuff with it. But obviously at the start, there was growing pains. The speed was obviously a little bit quick at times, but playing with a player like Sam every day in practice and in games, my skating just kept getting better. So I think obviously it was tough, but you know, when you're playing with good players, you obviously improve.
Nick, what does it mean to you to join players like Aaron Ashe and Troy Bodhi as players from Portage la Prairie who are being drafted into the NHL?
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Add Dean Stewart to that list. Dean's a close friend of mine. He got drafted last year at Arizona, but
right.
I think it would be really, really cool. I think it doesn't happen every day, and it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Nick, we'll let you go on this last question. We really appreciate your time this morning. You know, nobody gets to the NHL or gets to the point where they're going to be drafted into the NHL without, you know, the assistance of mentors and family. You know, who's that sort of one special person in your life, be it a family member or be it an outside influence, who has really helped you develop to this point in time where you're expected to hear your name called coming up in a couple weeks in Chicago?
I think the biggest person for me would be my dad, my grandpa. I think they've been there for me my whole life, pushing me no matter what. And I think they know what to tell me. They know when to criticize me. They know when to give me positives after games. And, you know, my dad knows me pretty well as a player. He's been a huge part of why I am where I am.
Nick, are you going to be able to have some of the members of your family down with you in Chicago?
I'm not totally sure on if I'm going or not right now. We haven't really decided that.
Well, Nick, whether you're there in person or you're there in spirit watching on TV, best of luck upcoming at the NHL draft in Chicago. Appreciate your time this morning, and thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, Nick. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Kerry Eads. He's the head coach of the USHL's Fargo Forest. Continue our conversation about the upcoming NHL draft. We'll talk about some of the draft-eligible prospects from the United States Hockey League. That's coming up next, hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Kerry Eads. Kerry is the general manager and head coach of the Fargo Force of the United States Hockey League. Kerry joins us now to talk about the draft-eligible prospects coming out of the USHL. Kerry, good morning, and thanks for doing this.
Yeah, very welcome, guys. Great to be back on the program.
Always our appreciation to you there, Kerry. We enjoy having you on each and every time around this time of the year to talk about the USHL prospects. Before we delve into individual players, in general, how would you describe the class of prospects that are coming out of the USHL that are eligible to be drafted coming up later this month in Chicago?
Yeah, I would say there's good depth, a lot of numbers. Probably this year, not as many first-round draft picks. We've had 6, 7, 8 in that range here the last 2, 3 seasons. So, I would think 2 or 3 probables this year. But, the rankings can always change and people can move up and down. So, again, maybe not as many top end, but definitely a good depth class. Could be more numbers than ever.
Kerry, we wanted to start off with Casey Mittelstadt, center from Eden Prairie, Minnesota. He split the season playing for Eden Prairie High School and the Green Bay Gamblers in the USHL. He put up 30 points in 24 games. He's projected to be a top 10 pick by many scouts. What were your impressions of Casey Mittelstadt watching him play this year?
Yeah, just definitely an explosive player, a guy that can play wing and center. I think that, he was a rarity. Probably people around the hockey world can't understand his decision to go back to high school after he actually led the USHL in scoring was leading the USHL in scoring in mid-November when he made that decision. But it's a big lure to go back and play high school and get his team to state again. It's much like football in Texas. So it wasn't that he wasn't dedicated, just trying to honor his hometown. And then when he came back, again, a very dynamic player that Green Bay instantly went on a playoff splurge and actually just lost their final regular season game to not qualify the playoffs. Otherwise, they would have been very, very dangerous in the playoffs. But, very well-deserved for his top 10 ranking, and I'd be shocked if he fell out of that top 10.
Kerry, left winger Eli Tolvanen scored 30 goals in 52 games this past season for Sioux City Musketeers. Scouts compared him to Marian Gaborik because of his shot and speed, while others are worried he's a bit of a defensive liability. How would you assess his overall game?
Yeah, I think the Gaborik comparison is a good one. We saw enough of his shot, of his 30 goals, he got his fair share against our team. we played him 7 times, I believe, and, we'd seen enough of Tolvanen over the season and even last season. But dynamic shooter. I mean, he's one of those guys that can score from the perimeter, and that's very rare in this day and age. So he gets that puck and comes in with speed over the blue line, and as soon as he's within the top of the circles, I mean, he's got a wrist shot, whether the goalie's screened or not. He's just got a different kind of release. I don't think the goaltender can pick it up off the stick, much like a baseball pitcher. Some guys have a hard time picking the ball coming out of his hand. Same as coming off his stick. And I don't know about a defensive liability. I think, you know, he's a competitor. He doesn't shy away from going the hard areas to score. I mean, he does kind of float to open areas. That's one of his strengths. And, you know, like a Phil Kessel can kind of get in behind the defense in a hurry. But I just think that, you know, with teaching and if he lacked competitiveness, I'd be worried about that. But he's a great all-around player and has a bright future.
Kerry Eads is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kerry is the general manager and head coach of the Fargo Force of the United States Hockey League. We're talking about the NHL draft-eligible prospects that are going to come out of the USHL. Kerry, Shane Bowers is a center for the Waterloo Blackhawks. You saw him play a lot this season, including in the Clark Cup playoffs. He's projected to be a late first-round, early second-round player, committed to play at Boston University next year. What stood out to you the most when watching Shane Bowers play this year for the Blackhawks, the Waterloo Blackhawks, that is?
Yeah, again, you know, a player I'm very familiar with, played six regular season games against them, and then the playoffs, of course, and he really, I thought, raised his level of play in the second half of the year. You know, kind of a neat story. Grew up in the Halifax area, I think Cole Harbour, same town as Sidney Crosby, and, you know, decided to go the college route. Had a lot of interest, of course, from the Q, and real top draft pick in the Q, and got special status to play in the USHL. So he's actually played for 2 years, his grade 11, grade 12 season in Waterloo, and I just thought he improved dramatically over the two seasons. He's a power forward, can really skate like the wind, protects the puck, again, can play center and wing, probably a little bit better defensively than the other two prospects we've talked about, but in his own right, elite scoring, elite skater, and he just has that pro body already at the age of 18. It's going to be interesting to see how strong and how fast he's going to be at 23, 24 years of age.
Kerry, Josh Norris of the U.S. National Team Development Program is another one of those USHL players who's expected to go late first round or in the second round. He's committed to play for the University of Michigan. Some of the scouts that I've read have compared him to JT Compher, who also played for the National Team Development Program and then went on to the University of Michigan. Do you see that comparison, Josh Norris being a JT Compher type of player?
Yeah, absolutely. Just a lot of speed and real hockey sense comes to mind. You know, when you talk about Norris, and I think you can kind of separate, you know, your players and your rankings. Obviously, speed is first and foremost, but, you know, hockey sense and character come to mind when you're speaking about him. And, you know, he's off the charts in that area. Again, a really developmental year. So I think that's what the scouts are looking for a lot is, where were you a year ago? Where were you at Christmas and at the end of the season? And he's really trending upward. And because of that, I think his draft status is going to be higher than, you know, we originally thought.
Keith Petruzzelli of the Muskegon Lumberjacks is a top-ranked draft-eligible goalie in the USHL. He's big at 6'6", and he led all rookie goalies in wins and save percentage. How much will his size and puck-playing ability factor in for the NHL teams that eventually drafts him?
I think big time. You know, in this day and age, you know, the NHL has really gone to size. Of course, that's with the better butterfly system and those taller goalies, of course, cover those upper corners of the net even when they're down on their knees. So, you know, just an outstanding season he had. You talk about growth. Muskegon has John Van Beesbrouck as their general manager. I'm sure he gets out in the ice a little bit with those goaltenders, and what a mentor he would be. And Petruzzelli, I think, is really grown in leaps and bounds. And, you know, mention his stick handling ability. He did score a goal this year, so he can fire that puck and he can move the puck to his defenseman. And, you know, much like we saw in the NHL playoffs with the goaltenders that can play the puck better than others, it's just like a third defenseman back there, and it's really hard to establish a forecheck.
Kerry Eads is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kerry is the head coach and the general manager of the Fargo Force of the United States Hockey League. Kerry, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about one of your own players who is, of course, draft eligible and expected to hear his name called in Chicago. That's Clayton Phillips, a defenseman on your team for the Fargo and a commitment to the University of Minnesota. Described as sort of a smaller, skilled defenseman with puck-moving abilities. How would you best describe Clayton Phillips? Is that a good description, or, you know, what do you know about him? I mean, obviously you know so much more about him, having seen him play game in, game out, practice in, practice out all season long.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say smaller, probably mid-size. He's grown a lot, really did a lot of strength training throughout the year. It's one of the advantages of our league. We almost play exclusively on Friday and Saturday nights, so there's really a good eligibility to improve your strength throughout the season. We have a strength coach that works with the guys Mondays and Wednesdays, and Clayton was one of our best students. He took his classes, high school classes, online, being just a grade 11 student this year, and in fact is going to graduate at the end of the summer. So really doing well academically, but, you know, that allowed him to get in the weight room with our strength coach and with our team twice a week. And, you know, because of that, his body has grown. He's never going to be a banger, a physical type, but, you know, he's able to close, stick on puck. He's able to angle and use his elite skating ability to defend really well. And, of course, you know, his skating ability also with the puck and joining the rush, because this day and age, if you don't have that defenseman joining up, it's hard to create odd number situations. So you can see Nashville and their success with their defensemen, how they create offense from the back end. And Clayton Phillips is one of those guys that potentially could do that down the road at the NHL level.
Kerry, we wanted to ask you about Riley Tuft. He played for you for 2 years in Fargo in the United States Hockey League. He spent the past year with the University of Minnesota Duluth. They went all the way to the Frozen Four final against Denver, who eventually won. How much did you stay in touch with Riley this year, and how do you think he did in his first year in NCAA college hockey?
Well, Riley had a good second half. I mean, his first half was a struggle, as a lot of true freshmen are. You know, you're 18 years old, and, you know, unlike major, junior, where 20-year-olds are the oldest and they have a limited number, you know, there's 22, 23, sometimes 24-year-olds in college hockey. So really playing against men. And, you know, Riley was one of those guys that only played half the season the year before with us, you know, much like Casey Middlestead did, had the draw to go back and play for his high school team. And because of that, I think he lost a little bit of his development. You know, our league is much more playing against men, you know, 19, 20-year-olds, strong guys and everything. And, you know, the stuff that you could do at high school, you can't get away with. And even though he came back and did play a little bit with us at the end of the year, I think that hurt his adjustment time. But, as a life decision, it was probably a good one. Hockey decision is questionable. And he had a good second half, however, really caught fire. He's a great big 6'4", 6'5", kid that can skate like the wind and has a nose for the net. So as his development came the second half, so did Minnesota Duluth. They didn't lose many games, and he took them all the way to the national championship game, and unfortunately losing by a goal to Denver.
Kerry, Andrei Svechnikov of the Muskegon Lumberjacks had the second best points per game average in the USHL this past season with 29 goals and 58 points in 48 games. Did the top prospect for the 2018 NHL draft come as advertised this year?
Absolutely. A special, special player. Missed some time in our league to, you know, compete with the Russian U18 team in a tournament. Then he went to the Worlds at the end of the season and missed the playoffs. But I had kind of thought that, what's all the hype about this kid? You know, he had a brother drafted by the Detroit Red Wings and playing nearby, and that's why he came to our league. But once we played him in January, I saw what all the hype was about. I mean, he's a man-child for a 2000 birth date. It's hard to believe that that's his age. And, he was just one of the most dominant players in the league at 16 years old. And we had one when I coached in Sioux Falls 3 years ago, Kiefer Bells, who was a first-round draft pick of the New York Islanders last year. That's two of the younger players in the league that kind of had man-child capabilities and, you know, really dominated the league at that level. Elite skill with size, with speed, hockey sense, just has a complete package. And obviously to be ranked that highly, there's got to be a special player, and it's going to be exciting to see where he goes.
I suspect we'll be talking about him when you join us next year at this time, Kerry, and he's, of course, a top prospect for the 2018 NHL draft. Kerry Eads is the head coach and general manager of the Fargo Force of the United States Hockey League. Kerry, always appreciate your time and your insight into the draft-eligible prospects in the USHL. We'll see you in Chicago in a few weeks' time. Thanks again for joining us.
As always, appreciate it, guys. See you in Chicago in 2 weeks.
Take care, Kerry. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot, Kerry.
Time to break. When we come back, our UFA of the Week segment deals with a couple of Arizona Coyotes players, one current, one former. We talk about them next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
She's going to take it away, but Domi intercepts for Verbati. He's going to walk it in. He shoots up high, stop, rebound, they score! Rene Verbata, second of the night. He took the shot and just kept going to the net.
Hommenville sets up Hansel, who has room. His shot scores! Martin Hansel makes it 2-0 Minnesota.
The UFA of the Week segment, UFAs plural of the Week segment, coming up right now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 20 minutes past the top of the hour. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. Dave Manuk, I'm reliably informed our new House of A softball jerseys are ready and will be debuted at our game, not tomorrow, but I believe we play Tuesday?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so Tuesday we should have our new jerseys, courtesy of their good friends at Keener Jerseys. Very so, nice. You know, the championship team that is the House of A.
defending
champion.
Three of the last 5 years, I think?
I believe it's a dynasty.
I think we're basically the Chicago Blackhawks.
Definitely a dynasty at this point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will look sharp in our new softball jerseys coming up on Tuesday as you stop rolling your eyes at us.
I'm not rolling my eyes. He's alum. He's proud.
It's just he was looking to the heavens. He was thinking about Tapper and Jack Hoffman, the guys who, you know, weren't playing on this team, but looking down and thinking about all those great championships we've won.
Two UFAs of the week. They're both one finished the year with the Arizona Coyotes. One has spent the entirety of his career with the Arizona Coyotes, less a few games after he was traded to the Minnesota Wild. Our UFAs of the week are Radim Verbata and Martin Hansel. Verbata coming off of a 1 year, $3.25 million contract that he signed after a stint in Vancouver. Martin Hansel coming off of a 5 year, $15.5 million contract that he had signed with the Arizona Coyotes. Let's start with Radim Verbata. This is a guy who really doesn't ever get any credit. You never hear anybody talk about Radim Verbata. And this is a guy who, last year, 20 goals, 35 assists, 55 points. A couple seasons previous in Vancouver, 30-goal guy with 63 points. This is a guy who can score, he can put up points, yet nobody ever talks about Radim Verbata as a key component of a team. How do you think he's going to do in free agency?
I've talked about Radim Verbata. I took him in a couple of hockey pools last year. He's a guy, as you mentioned, Drew, he has a long history in the NHL of scoring. He's an older player, obviously, right now, as you mentioned, at 35 years old. But when you're talking about Verbata, he's most likely going to sign a 1 or 2 year deal. And he's, you know, a bit of a journeyman forward at this point. But when you look around the league and you see some of those holes on a third line of a team, right? That's where he fits in. And he's a guy that, if you need to, can play on one of your top power play units, right? So there's certainly going to be a market for Radim Verbata. I don't think it's as big as it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but certainly, you know, you mentioned, I mean, how many guys in the NHL score 20 goals? Is he a little bit slower now in his older age? Absolutely, but that's to be expected. So for Verbata, I mean, the LA Kings, to me, make a lot of sense. Maybe, you know, the Montreal Canadiens throw him a 1 year, $2 million contract, $2.5 million a year. I think that's what you're looking for Radim Verbata. I don't think he's going to get a 2 year, $8 million contract or anything like that. Maybe we'll be surprised. But he's certainly a guy that, if you're looking for a veteran scorer to shore up your bottom lines, he's a guy that's available.
I mean, he can be a little inconsistent, but overall, he's got really good hands. His speed is still not, I mean, he, it's fallen off obviously because he's 35 years of age, but he's not, he hasn't fallen off tremendously. So he's still, I mean, as you said, Drew, he's still putting home 20 goals on, you know, at least for the last few years in 30, and he had a number of 30 goal seasons. So I think he can find a home in a team that, you know, like as he said, an LA would make a nice fit because you've got a team that needs goal scoring. Montreal could always use goal scoring. Those are two really good options. The thing that's funny because I was getting ready for this segment, I was looking at, you know, Verbata, and I'm thinking to myself, he was drafted in 99. And now the players, as we prepare for the draft segments, are born that year. It's amazing to see that, you know, he's managed to last this long in the league. And so it's testament to his fitness and his commitment, to, because as most guys talk about, this is a faster league. It is a younger league. So as a 35-year-old, to be able to still put in 20 goals, especially on an Arizona team that, let's face it, wasn't exactly upper echelon, not a bad statement for him.
And that goes back to the right fit, right? Like Radim Verbata, if he signs with the Vancouver Canucks, which I wouldn't imagine he would go back to Vancouver. But
spent two seasons in Vancouver.
But, I mean, a team like the Vancouver Canucks or the Colorado Avalanche, one of these teams that we don't expect to be a playoff team next year, he's not really going to add much to one of those teams. But if you put him on even a Chicago or even a Pittsburgh in a third or fourth line role, right, if Pittsburgh ends up losing, you know, a Nick Bonino or something like that, not that Radim Verbata is the same type of player as Nick Bonino, but the point is, if he's playing, you know, a third or fourth line role and, you know, you're expecting him to chip in 15 or 20 goals, he can help an already established team, right? He's no longer a guy that you can say is a top six player. He probably hasn't been a top six player for 3 years now, right? So he still does have value, having said that, though, because you know that he can put the puck in the net. Again, I wouldn't expect him to get more of a one-year or two-year deal from a team.
Martin Hanzel played his entire career, of course, with the Arizona Coyotes before being traded at the trade deadline to the Minnesota Wild. You know, while with the Coyotes, he had 26 points in 51 games. He put in 13 points in 20 games for the Wild. So, you know, right around 40 points, which is what his career high is in terms of points, is 40. Coming off of a season coming off of a five-year, $15.5 million contract. Not an offensive dynamo by any stretch, but big centerman. He's 6'6". You know, does Martin Hanzel, you know, is his stock diminished as a result of the Stanley Cup playoffs and the disappointment that the Wild had? This is a guy who doesn't get a lot in terms of offense. How do you evaluate Martin Hanzel as an unrestricted free agent?
Yeah, Drew, I would say his stock did drop, especially in the playoffs. But when he went over to the Minnesota Wild, he was actually pretty effective in that third-line center role. And you mentioned he's not a guy that's going to put up 70 or 75 points. He's always been kind of a 15-goal, 40-point guy, right? But Hanzel is a guy that can play penalty kill. You know, he can even go out there on the power play. He's not a pure sniper, I would say, but he does have some offensive abilities, right? So I think, again, you know, the fit has to be right. I don't see him getting a five-year deal. I would be surprised if he got a five-year deal from a team. I would expect him to maybe be a candidate for a two, maybe a three-year deal. We'll have to wait and see until free agency. But he's a valuable player. As you mentioned, he's very big. You know, he can move up and down the ice for a big guy. So, you know, he's an interesting one to me. Chuck Fletcher even said, you know, he was a mistake to acquire him from the Minnesota Wild because they gave up a lot for him.
Well, they gave up, if I recall, a first-round pick, a second-round pick. I mean, it's really affected the Wild in terms of their draft prospects and you know, the draft picks that they have going forward.
You have to suspect that the Wild aren't going to be interested in re-signing him after the team owner says, I wish we hadn't made the trade.
That's right.
So you got to think that he will be seeing greener pastures somewhere else. I mean, he's got size. He doesn't really have the speed anymore, you know, like to really – I'm not saying he's terribly slow, but again, it's a younger league. It's a faster league. You know, to me, can a team use a player like him? Yeah, I think so. But again, I think it goes to – he has to go to a team, like as he was talking about with Verbata, with that already is an established team that could use a center that's not going to be a, you know, first-line, second-line center – and really just kind of compliment the team.
He strikes me as the kind of guy, he strikes me as the kind of player who might have to wait a little while before getting a contract as we enter into free agency. You know, as he's now on, he's 30, and 30 is always that benchmark where guys, you know, aren't necessarily as big in demand. He doesn't score. He doesn't put up many goals. He doesn't put up many points. So this is a guy who I don't think anybody's going to be knocking down his door to necessarily sign him like you've seen with other free agents who can put the puck in the net.
You know, I'm just thinking out loud here, but a team to me that makes a lot of sense for Martin Hanzel for them to acquire is the New Jersey Devils, right? You have a younger team, and sure, you've got Adam Henrik and Travis Zajac up the middle, but a guy like Hanzel, I would think, would fit in perfectly as their third-line center. He's from Czech Republic. They've also got Pavel Zak in the system. We know how many good Czech Republic players the Devils have had, right, with Patrick Eliash.
Any excuse to mention the Devils, right?
Well, no, I'm just saying, I mean, Dave's right, though. Martin Hanzel's not a first-line center or second-line center. You know, some of those point totals weren't very good. I mean, he has put up, you know, a couple of 40-point years, but he was on some pretty bad Coyotes teams, guys, let's be honest. But, again, he's serviceable. He's a guy that you know can play both ends of the ice, right? Penalty kill, and we talked about that. That's why the Wild got him, is a guy that can win you face-offs and all that. So I do think Hanzel is going to have some interest. Again, we're not talking about, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk or, you know, some of the other players that are going to get a lot more interest than Martin Hanzel. But certainly, again, I think for either an established team who really needs that third-line center or even a team that's trying to get back into the playoffs, like a team like the Devils, to work with some of their younger players, I do think, Hanzel is going to get scooped up. But again, I don't know if he necessarily gets a five-year deal. I would expect it to be probably a two- or three-year deal.
Coming up next, we continue our NHL draft preview. We're going to look at Western Hockey League prospects. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the third hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. In case you want to reach us here in studio, you can do so via text 129090. That's where you text, send your messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
To discuss the Western Hockey League draft-eligible prospects, we're pleased to be joined by Guy Flaming, host of the Pipeline Show, which you can, of course, listen to on a weekly basis. Does a great job of covering the world of junior hockey and discussing upcoming NHL draft prospects. Guy, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me again. Great to be back on the show.
It's always our pleasure. We, of course, start right at the top of the NHL draft. Nolan Patrick of the Brandon Wheat Kings is in a heated debate if he should go first overall or if it should be Nico Hischier of the QMJHL. From your perspective, you know, should Nolan Patrick go ahead of Nico? And if not, how much do you think that injury history, his injury-riddled season, how much of that do you think is playing into the decision to take Nico over Nolan?
If in fact, Hischier goes to number one, I would guess that the injury situation and the double hernia that Nolan Patrick had to deal with, I would say, I would assume that would play a big role in the decision should Nashville decide not to take Patrick, number one overall. Now, that said, both New Jersey and Philadelphia, they're running Nolan Patrick through their own medical staff, and they're going to know for sure what the situation is. So, if New Jersey decides to pass and take Hischier, first off, Hischier deserves to be considered number one as well. I mean, they're both really, really good players. So it shouldn't be considered a huge shock. But I think you go with the slightly bigger guy and the slightly more advanced guy, maybe a bit closer to the NHL guy. So, yeah, if Nolan Patrick doesn't go number one, I would guess the injury plays some sort of a factor in that decision.
Guy, there's another center from Winnipeg who's projected by many scouts to go in the top 10. That's, of course, Cody Glass of the Portland Winterhawks. He absolutely tore up the Dub this year with 94 points in 69 games. What impresses you most about Cody Glass's game?
Well, I think what's the most interesting for me about Cody Glass is just how far he's come in such a short period of time. It reminds me a bit of Ryan Johansson in his draft year, who I remember when I had him on the show, and it was right before the draft, he had said his goal coming into the year was to be taken in the top three rounds, and he eventually went top five. Cody Glass, similar in the sense that he wasn't on the radar for a first-round pick at the start of the year, and just his development just took off, and he started scoring a ton of points for the Portland Winterhawks, became an offensive end, and probably an emotional leader as well in that locker room. He's got size, but he's not physically mature yet. You know, he's 6'2", but there's still room for him to comfortably put 15, 20 pounds on. So I think he's still just scratching the surface of what he can do. And that's the most intriguing part for me, is that he's come so far in such a short period of time, but he's not done. There's still a long ways for him to go.
Gee, Tri-City American center Michael Rasmussen is great size at 6'5", but some see him as a bit of a boom or bust player. Some of the scouts think that he could have number one center upside, while others think he'll be a third liner in the NHL level. What is your take on Rasmussen?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see him live myself because Tri-City didn't come to Edmonton this year. But I know I've spoken with a lot of people who did see him, and Edmonton Oil Kings play-by-play guy Corey Graham being one of them. Raved about him. I thought he was really, really good, and seen him a bit on video and watching games online. But what's not to like about 6'6" and that size and strength? He might not be the speediest guy in the world, but sounds like he's a pretty intelligent kid and pretty smart on the ice as well. So I think I wouldn't call him boom bust necessarily, but he might not be a number one a guy, but I think he's still a top six guy.
Guy Flaming is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Guy is the host of the Pipeline Show, which, of course, you can download via iTunes or, of course, on your Samsung device. You can find it online as well as at thepipelineshow.com. Guy, in terms of defense, Cale Makar is expected to be one of the first defensemen drafted in this draft, if not the first. Yeah. Plays for the Brooks Bandits of the Alberta Junior A Hockey League. Not every year that a guy who plays Junior A hockey, as opposed to, you know, in the Canadian Hockey League, is a top 10 NHL draft pick. What has made Makar so special, and do you think that, you know, that playing in the Alberta Junior A League has hindered him at all?
Yeah, you know, that's funny, because it is tough to evaluate guys at that level, because you're trying to compare apples to oranges in some regard. So you're looking to see how a guy like he might perform on the international stage against some other players in the draft class. When he was at the World Junior A Challenge this year in Bonnyville in Alberta, he was unbelievable. Set a record in one game for most points by a defenseman, put up 5 against Switzerland. It was against the Swiss. But he was really solid throughout that tournament. And you look, you know, it's unfortunate, not unfortunate, but it would have been nice to see him at the World U18s in late April. Unfortunately, his team went all the way to the RBC Cup Finals, so he wasn't there. But like Dante Fabro and Tyson Jost last year, there was a lot of, well, they're in the BCHL, how good would they be against CHL competition? We didn't get to see that really with Cale Makar this year, but for the first time in my life, I can say I like Cale, because Cale Makar was outstanding, you know. And I saw a lot of the Oilers series against the Anaheim Ducks, and he reminds me a ton of Brandon Montour. And I think Montour all over the ice, so quick, carries the puck really well, just jumps up into the play all the time. Makar is a lot like that, and I'll be interested to see if he does in fact go to the college route of his choice, which was Massachusetts, to play with the Minutemen. I know the Medicine Hat Tigers hold his WHL rights, but I believe the Regina Pats just listed his younger brother, who could play in the WHL this year. He's a 16-year-old from Calgary named Taylor Makar. Now, I don't know for sure they're related, but if they are, boy, cue the trade rumors there, because I think Regina would really like to get a guy like Cale Makar.
Guy, another WHL defenseman that's expected to go in the first round is Cal Foote. He's the son of former NHLer Adam Foote. He's obviously got the great size, like his dad, 6'4", 210 pounds. He's got the booming shot. Some have said that he might need to work on his skating at the NHL level. What do you think his upside is at the NHL level, and do you think he's kind of going to go in the mid-first round there?
Yeah, I do think he's probably a mid-first rounder. I look at Cale Makar, and he reminds me a bit of Griffin Reinhardt at the WHL level, who was dominant at times, certainly by the end of his WHL career. Griffin Reinhardt was unbelievable. Hasn't necessarily been on the fast track to get to the NHL, and I think speed and skating is a big issue for Reinhardt. But for Cale Foote, he's big and strong. He's very smart, and I think that's his best asset, is how well he thinks the game, and he moves the puck really well. He's not overly physical, not overly aggressive, at least in the games that I've seen him play. and his skating is just average. So I think, you know, the last name certainly helps him, I believe. And I've seen it written and heard it said that if he wasn't Adam Foote's son, where would he be ranked in the draft? And I think that's kind of fair. I think Foote's a good player, but he's still pretty raw, and it might take him a little bit longer.
The Spokane Chiefs winger, Kaylor Yamamoto, is projected to be a late first-round pick. He had 99 points in 65 games this season, which was sixth most in the WHL. Some scouts have compared his game to Tyler Johnson's, who also played for Spokane but was never drafted. What are your impressions of Yamamoto's game?
Yeah, I like Kaylor Yamamoto. He's small. There's no question about that. But I think we're seeing small guys have success at the NHL level. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau is the poster child for that now. And Yamamoto's got a ton of skill, no question. I'm sure he plays in the World Juniors this coming year for the United States. Put up a ton of points for a team that didn't make the playoffs this year in Spokane. I guess he skates really well, very, very skilled. I think Yamamoto is a good guy to take a risk on. And if he, you know, with his size, he could slip out of the first round, conceivably. And if that happened, I think somebody that's a player definitely worth rolling the dice on in round two, if he's still there.
Guy Flaming is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Guy covers the world of junior hockey and of draft-eligible prospects and really prospects in general for on his program, The Pipeline Show. You can get it at thepipelineshow.com. Guy, Cole Lind is a right-winger for the Kelowna Rockets. He led the team in scoring during the regular season, despite the team being littered with NHL prospects like Dylan Dubé and Nick Merkley. You know, is Cole Lind the kind of guy that could be a steal for a team in either sort of the late first or second round?
Well, I think you mentioned the players that are on that team, and I think that kind of works against a guy every once in a while in that, okay, he's riding the coattails of other players. But hey, take nothing away from Cole Lind. 30 goals is pretty impressive for a guy his age. I think he's a good player. I don't know if he's a high, you know, a first-line player at the next level. I think he's probably a middle-six guy. But I like Cole Lind, and I think maybe to some degree he's still scratching the surface of what he can do. He's a guy that I think a lot of people will be watching this year in Kelowna because of how many guys the Rockets will be losing to the pro ranks to see if he can continue and take a step forward in his development. But I think Cole Lind is a player to watch.
Guy, last hour we had Nick Henry of the Regina Pats on the show. He's, of course, from Portage La Prairie, and I know that you've had him on your show before, and you've seen him play against the Edmonton Oil Kings. He's projected to go somewhere between the second and fourth round. From what you've seen of Nick Henry, what are his greatest strengths, and what does he need to work on to get to that NHL level?
I think what he has to work on the most is probably strength, and you can say that about most guys his age. But there's so much skill, and he skates really well. I think he's equally a setup guy and a shooter, and he's on the right team because he's got lots of talent around him. And I think you're looking for that from players as well. Thinking, you know, it's like a pyramid. You're at the junior level now, and as you get to the next level, the quality of players and competition that you're with and against is so much better each step of the way. Well, so you need a guy that you know can play with talented players, and Nick Henry is that kind of guy. And I don't mean to just describe him as a complimentary guy, but at the same time, you do need to know that he can handle playing with high-end skill. And Nick Henry is a good player. I like him quite a bit, actually. And I would think more second round than fourth round for me, that's for sure.
Guy, Brandon Wheat, Kings center, Stelio Mateos, is projected to go somewhere between the second and fourth round in the draft. He had 69 games, 26 goals, 35 assists for 61 points. Do you see him as more of a power forward at the NHL level?
That's interesting. Mateos is a guy I've never actually seen really well. And I've seen the Brandon Wheat Kings quite a bit, and he's never really stood out a whole lot for me. And I think he's better than what I've seen, and I know most people like him more than I do and have him higher than I do, but he just doesn't do a whole lot for me. I think he's a good player, and there's got to be something there because his points are pretty good, but I haven't really seen the best of Stelio Mateos. I think that's probably the best way for me to say it. So in that regard, I might be the wrong guy to ask, but you know, can he be a power forward? He's got the size to be a power forward, and I think he can play with somewhat of a physical edge, but maybe it's consistency for me. And that's another thing that a lot of guys his age have to go with. But
as a former first overall pick in the WHL, he has not lived up to those expectations, in my mind, so far in his career.
Gee, we ask you this towards the end of the interview every year. Who is a sleeper pick for you in the Western Hockey League who might be taken in the second or third or later rounds who might surprise some people? I remember a couple of years ago you picked Austin Wagner, who absolutely tore up the WHL this year with the Regina Pats, and now he's a top prospect in the Los Angeles Kings system. For you, who's somebody to look out for in those later rounds?
Well, for me, and I don't think he's going to get to the later rounds. I don't think he blasts past the second round, to be honest with you. Morgan Geeky, he's a Manitoba kid from Strathclair. Strathclair. But he plays for the Tri-City Americans. He was draft eligible last year, didn't get taken. He didn't put up big numbers. And he was spindly. He was a stick, 6'2", 165 pounds or something last year. So you can kind of understand why he wouldn't get selected. Well, he goes from 25 points to 90 points this year, 35 goals, and played on a good team, but with Michael Rasmussen injured, it didn't slow him down. He, in fact, didn't play with Rasmussen for most of the season. I had him on the show recently, and he told me he's now 6'3 and 195 pounds, or almost 200 pounds. I compared his numbers this year to players who were drafted in 2016, and he's outscoring most of them. So I think Morgan Geeky was a late bloomer who is now on track, and I fully expect he's a second-round, maybe even an early second-round pick. At least he would be if I was picking.
Gee, we'll let you go on this last question. It doesn't have to do with a specific prospect in this year's upcoming NHL draft, but we've spoken to you before about Matteo Gennaro, who was a Winnipeg Jets draft pick a number of years ago, back in 2015. He was a seventh rounder. He had a huge spike in his points this year to 80 points after coming off a year where he's usually in around the 25-30 point mark. Were you surprised that the Jets didn't sign him to a contract, or do you think that his point total this year was more a result of being an overage playing in the Western Hockey League?
Well, and that's a great point, and I think that is probably the case, although I'm not sure what the Jets situation was for contracts, and I'd be surprised if they didn't at least offer him a minor league contract, not an NHL clause involved. But, Matteo Gennaro was a guy who I think is probably, it's fair to describe him as the way you did, that as he got older and became an overage player in the WHL with the Hitmen, that really helped him get his offensive numbers to the next level. And Calgary wasn't a great team last year, so he would have he played a ton for the Hitmen and had lots of opportunity. But I don't necessarily expect that from him at the next level. So I won't say I'm shocked by that, that he wasn't signed by the Jets, but I would be surprised if we heard that he wasn't offered a minor league deal, because there's something there, but it might only be a minor league player.
Guy Flaming is the host of The Pipeline Show. You can catch it online at thepipelineshow.com. And, of course, you can subscribe to the podcast of it. It's a great listen if you're a fan of draft prospects and the junior hockey game, especially here in Western Canada. Guy, always appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you. That was very kind of you. I appreciate it, and hope we can do it again.
We will absolutely do it again. You're not getting away from us that easily. Let's head to break. When we come back, NHL news and notes, look around the league at some signings of various players who were RFAs. One final segment to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
To Toffoli, crisscrosses at the blue line, still has it, feeds it over to Kopitar, to Toffoli, one-timer, score! Tyler Toffoli with a blast, and he ties the game on the power play.
NHL news and notes.
One final segment on this Saturday morning. It's NHL News and Notes. It's brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, they have two shows. J.R. DeGuzman in town. It's been his final night after a stellar week of comedy. If you're looking for something to do tonight, there's two shows, 7:15, 10 p.m., RumorsComedyClub.com. Go check out J.R. DeGuzman and take a look at the upcoming comedian roster. Some great shows coming to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Mention Tyler Toffoli. He was a pending RFA. No longer, he signs a three-year contract with the Los Angeles Kings. It pays him $13.8 million over the course of that contract. He had 16 goals and 18 assists in 63 games last season for the Kings. Was this a must-sign player for the Kings? Are you surprised at the term? Are you surprised at the dollar amount that Toffoli gets from the LA Kings as?
Yeah, I am surprised, actually, Drew, at the amount of years that Tyler Toffoli signed with the LA Kings for. I thought he was more likely to sign a five-year contract or even a six-year contract, and that might be partly due to the fact that he had a down year. I mean, Tyler Toffoli is a 25-year-old player that really came into his own that second Stanley Cup run that the LA Kings had in 2014. He was almost a guy that they relied on primarily for scoring as a 22-year-old, and he put up 30 goals and almost 60 points as a 23-year-old. And let's be honest, last year, most of the players on the LA Kings had down years. So you look at his totals and you say, you know, Tyler Toffoli, what's going on there? But, I mean, this is a guy that I think can bounce back with a 25 or 30-goal year next year with the LA Kings, especially if they make moves as we expect them to do to get better offensively, right? So I am a little bit surprised, Drew, that he didn't sign a longer contract. But when you look at the LA Kings and they've got a roster that's full of flaws, and obviously they're still led by Anze Kopitar and Drew Doughty, but the LA Kings would love to get rid of Dustin Brown's contract. They'd love to get rid of Marian Gaborik's contract. And you know that they've signed Tanner Pearson and Jeff Carter is still there. But, I mean, you can't let a guy like Tyler Toffoli go. You sign him to a three-year deal, and then he can prove himself in those years. And I would expect after that, maybe then you sign him to a longer contract when he's, 28, 29 years old. You sign him to maybe a 4 or 5 year deal. But I was a little bit surprised that he didn't sign for longer.
Another contract for an RFA was signed yesterday that goes to Philadelphia Flyers defenseman Shane Gostisbehere. He signs a 6 year, $27 million contract, a $4.5 million cap hit, Dave. This is a guy who had a bit of a down year last season after, you know, storming into the NHL where he had that terrific rookie year where he was a Calder Trophy nominee. Last year, he was a healthy scratch at various points in time, but, you know, obviously a key member of the Flyers. They make the long-term commitment to him, a 6 year, $27 million contract.
Yeah, he did seem to fall out of favor with the head coach in Philadelphia, Dave Axtell, and I was surprised, you know, because he is such a dynamic player, and many people in Philadelphia really, really like the type of development he's kind of as he's progressed. So it was a little surprising to see that last season, especially, you know, I mean, Philadelphia had that great run where they won, I think, 10 or 11 games in a row and things were chugging along. But yeah, Gostisbehere kind of fell out of favor with the coach. And to be honest with you, I think that's just good coaching. I think that's the coach saying, look, you know, you're a young player, and even though you're a good player and you're a dynamic player, you have to learn, you have to develop. You can't just be handed anything, even though it's in the NHL. And so maybe that's just a teaching moment from his coach, and that's fine, but I'm not surprised that they signed him up long-term.
And Dave, you wonder what kind of impact that'll have on Jacob Trouba's next contract, because even though Jacob Trouba's played two more years in the NHL, similar age, right? Trouba's 23, Gostisbehere is 24, and I think Gostisbehere has set the mark a little bit for how much an offensive defenseman should be paid, right? So, I mean, if he's getting $4.5 million a year, can Trouba really ask for more than $5 million a year? It'll be interesting to see what Trouba gets for his next contract.
That's it for the Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Support those fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.